Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about how COVID-19 is impacting clients, and we are joined by Hoban Law Group Associate Attorney, Darren Kaplan. Darren, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's really exciting. I feel like probably the first fanboy to arrive on this podcast. I've been listening for a few weeks, but Eric and Bob, it feels like I'm among celebrities. Very honored.
Oh, you're too kind, Darren. You're too kind. And tell us, how are you holding up during the coronavirus? How have things been for you?
Yeah, I think I'm okay. I think just like everyone else, we're all in a bit of a philosophical mood about things. You know, I take my own hat off and, of course, keep the mask on as is us of us at the moment. And we're all just human beings faced with a lot more answers than questions. So I'm at home. I'm trying to be productive as I can. Sometimes it feels like we're busier than ever. We're doing everything to make work meaningful and to be collaborative and stay connected.
Well, Darren, tell us a little bit about one of the more unfortunate parts for you personally of COVID-19, which is that you don't get to watch soccer on television at ungodly early hours in the morning anymore.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's been, you know, I feel very silly talking about it, right? But it actually is a bit of a painful thing for me. Of course, people are dealing with disease and toilet paper famine and all sorts of issues. But for me, missing English Premier League soccer is a big deal, as Bob mentioned. Usually I'm awake at 4 or 5 a.m. here in at Mountain Time in Denver, Colorado, watching my beloved Manchester United. And we had just taken a good turn of form there. But I will say that I'd rather not watch soccer with an empty stadium. I think most sports fans want the energy, want people to be enjoying, but just can't wait for it all to get back to normal.
That's a great point, too. Yeah, it would be weird to watch a sporting event with no crowd, no energy, influencing the game in whatever intangible way it does. Darren, so many things have changed. That's that's one of the things we really wanted to cover here. We wanted to talk about the impact that you've seen on clients, but things were so different just a little bit ago. Tell us about the change. Tell us about how COVID has changed what clients are thinking about, what they should be concerned about, and what they're reaching out to the firm for.
Sure, yeah. So this is a bit of a background, I guess. I'm a second-year associate at the Hoban Law Group, but I like to joke that I went to the Hoban School of Law because I've been with the firm as a law student, intern, you know, then as a law clerk, as an associate. So I've seen a lot of different phases of the cannabis industry, I guess, if you want to group it like that. And I've seen a lot of different clients come through the door. I think an important baseline, and I've heard Bob talk about this before as well, is that it's important to remember that cannabis businesses already operate without certain protections, right? Or they already operate in this very uniquely, highly regulated area with questions of law, questions of regulatory compliance, constantly sort of pervading the space. So in that sense, I guess you could say our clients are some of the best prepared out of all the businesses that are trying to navigate these uncertain times. It does add an extra layer, right? So we're still seeing our clients come in for those basic issues, right? They're setting up companies, or they're entering into contracts, or they're trying to think through their packaging and their labeling in whichever given state they're operating in. And so they're still navigating all of those issues, and they haven't gone away. People are still trying to go on with their businesses. Of course, they're just having to now worry about how they operate given the unique circumstances. I would say, too, that I think it's important for lawyers to fully be counselors and representatives of their clients. And so just, again, as a human being, I think it gets lost that these employers or these companies, that they care deeply about their employees. They're very worried about their own situations, about their customers, about their industry. And so they're struggling, like I think we all are, trying to navigate that emotional, personal component. And then, as I say, that baseline of cannabis compliance, before you even get into the sort of COVID-related things at the federal, state, and local levels. And of course, we're seeing a lot of those particular questions.
Well, one question, Darren, that comes to mind for me, and it's come up on a number of occasions here in recent days and week plus, has to do with the stimulus funds. And it has to deal with, to your point, how these businesses, our industry, the cannabis industry, marijuana, hemp businesses, they are operating. Even when they're operating clearly legally, like hemp businesses are, there's still a shroud of uncertainty around that in terms of federal treatment. And whereas the marijuana side of the industry is clearly illegal from a controlled substances standpoint. And then we've wrestled with issues of whether ancillary businesses qualify as participating on the legal or the illegal side. Now, two of the forms of funds that are coming out from the SBA involve payroll protection, and the other one is sort of emergency relief funds. And the payroll protection, you have to go directly to a bank. And those banks have sort of discretion, not just sort of, express discretion in the law that was passed to decline to work with a particular business, even if it is 100% lawful hemp. So can you talk, generally speaking, without maybe using a specific example, about just some of those issues and how the fact that these banks do have discretion and that it remains an uphill battle for folks on the hemp, 100% legal hemp cultivation and possession side of things?
Yeah, of course. And so I know it won't come as a surprise to anyone on the call. It may come as a surprise to some of our listeners, but the federal government doesn't always have its show together. And especially in light of this pandemic, the rollout of this response has, you know, while positively intentioned, has not been ultimately smooth. So I should start in saying this is a moving target. We expect there to be more rounds of legislation. I know for a fact that there are lobbying groups and trade associations that are working even today with the offices of Speaker Pelosi and Representative Perlmutter and individuals like that, who are promising that the next round of coronavirus relief, at least from the House perspective, is going to contain more explicit protections for small businesses in the cannabis space. We'll wait to see what happens there. But in the meantime, to your question, Bob, what the stimulus legislation has essentially done is treated cannabis, again, microcosmically, very much the same way that it has before. So predating the coronavirus pandemic, the Small Business Administration, in terms of loans that it was backing, had already provided guidance that cannabis businesses are not necessarily to be treated the same way. And it drew that distinction, as I think we do, between hemp and marijuana businesses. So on the hemp side of things, I think it's quite clear, and it's something to celebrate in the cannabis industry, that per the provisions of the 2018 Farm Bill, when you're exercising or you're operating in the hemp space, you're doing something that under federal law, there's no question as to the legality of that, right? You're not operating with a controlled substance. On the marijuana side, and again, this is in guidance that predates the coronavirus, so it has been affirmed since in application to the coronavirus and those funds. Marijuana touching businesses, at least those which the SBA defines as direct marijuana businesses, are doing something that is expressly illicit under federal law. That's been obscured, and there's been carve outs for regulation and legalization at the state level. But of course, that tension still exists. So where we came into the situation was, we thought, okay, on the hemp side of things, things are fairly clear. You know, if you're going to apply either to the SBA directly for that emergency loan you referenced, or if you're going to go to your lender, which usually would be probably a pre-existing lender anyway, under the Paycheck Protection Program, you're likely in the clear in terms of the activity you're doing is not illegal. And so to that end, we would expect, you know, at least lenders to use that discretion you mentioned to extend the relief. What we're seeing over the last few days is that banks are actually declining certain applications, even for lawful hemp businesses. And so this distinction is no longer so clear. I think we can stand by the fact that it is much clearer, at least from, you know, just the textbook language and even some of the supporting guidance that's come from FDA, that hemp is of course lawful, but then more safe in terms of going for this release. And originally we had thought that was certainly the case, and then on the marijuana side of things, that was most likely going to be excluded based on the SBA release language. And we're now seeing that in practice that language is meaning very little. So while those prohibitions may exist still on the marijuana side of things, the hemp side of things, just because SBA is providing that affirmative guidance or that affirmative discretion, it doesn't mean that lenders are going to necessarily respond positively to a hemp application.
Now it's interesting, and you know, you mentioned something, and just a sort of observation. It seems to me that it's hard to really have a baseline of expectations for your government in this type of scenario, right? Because it doesn't happen that often. You don't have to make such swift decisions and move such a large, unwieldy beast that is the government, the federal government in particular, and so many people. You don't do that quickly. You don't do that easily. You don't do that because you've practiced it, although it sounds like there could have been better preparation, et cetera. My whole point is, though, what kind of expectations can we have in a short period of time to have a massive federal government and state governments sort of working together at the same time, not working together and splitting off? How can we expect them to do so much literally so fast, considering governments, not political, this is not a political statement, governments are just difficult to maneuver. It takes time, so much time for anything to get done. Look at our history with hemp legislation and the ongoing enactment of regulations from the USDA, the DEA, and the ultimately the FDA. So I don't know. As an observation, yes, things could have been done much, much, much better. Messaging could be better, et cetera, et cetera. But it is something to be aware of. And it is quite impressive that such a massive, unwieldy machine can take action so quickly at every level, even though we sit here and we say, oh, we wish that would have been done better and that would have done better. It is quite amazing that things can work that fast, but also it's also quite alarming, the potential repercussions that come out of it. So repercussions for clients, for people in the industry, are not limited to those funds with stimulus situations. They're looking at contract scenarios. They're looking at people being unable or unwilling to perform, which might lead to litigation disputes. What kind of other things are sort of unique to this COVID scenario, Darren?
Yes. Yeah, so first, Bob, I think that's such an excellent point, that no one can have expectations for the government, or any other entity. I mean, even look for local businesses, even look to sort of organizations and community faith-based groups and things like that. Everyone's trying to lead in their own way, and it's actually been extraordinarily inspiring to see small business owners, teachers, church leaders, local state politicians, our own Governor Flores, people like that have truly stepped up. But then yourself, Bob, and small business owners and employers around the country have really stepped up to the mantle, and it's quite amazing, and it's inspiring to know that in a time of so much uncertainty and so many questions, that individuals are able to get together and come to resolutions and solutions for themselves, because ultimately none of us know how long this is going to last. And so our neighbors and our friends and our colleagues and our family members and those who we're interacting with in this strange space, we have to inspire one another and connect and collaborate. In terms of the other sorts of issues we're seeing from our clients, I mean, you can just look at those state and local orders that we're seeing come out sort of left and right and in sort of an evolving way, to understand that, again, I guess to the same point, no business was prepared for this. So in the morning, you may be wondering if you're an essential business and what is required of you to stay open. Maybe in the afternoon, you're wondering how many people you can have inside your business. Maybe, come tea time in the evening, you're wondering how you maintain social distancing and whether curbside delivery is still a viable thing as a dispensary. So you've got all these questions of not just cannabis compliance and not just looking at the federal relief programs. And I should say, while we're on that point, there's, of course, obligations that are imposed on cannabis businesses by the SFCRA that cannabis businesses still do have to navigate, for example, paid sick leave and things like that. And so to echo the theme of today, there's so many questions that they're facing all the time. And then I think you get basic questions of labor law. You know, people are still having to operate their businesses as much as they don't want to make these tough decisions. There's still questions of whether you can furlough employees or lay them off or reduce hours or meet demand. You know, there's basic questions of operating your business. So these things don't go away. I can tell you, as someone that litigates for 40% to 50% of my day, or as much as I can stay out of a courtroom, that litigation is not going away either. I certainly, in my own role and opposing counsel, where I've experienced it, we've all tried to be human beings to one another and be a little more patient than we usually would be. And I think certainly the courts are operating in a different way, but you know, none of these issues of day-to-day business operations have gone away. So we're just seeing layers and layers of issues.
I want to harken back to one thing that you touched on, Darren, which is that, you know, you've seen firsthand some legal hemp businesses apply for loans and be rejected because that line between a hemp and a marijuana business. This is something we touched on, I don't know, maybe it was a week, maybe 2 weeks ago when we first saw that. We raised this issue that, you know, to your point, Bob, it takes a long time for the government to do anything. You know, we saw the
anything, Eric.
And they, you know, we with the FDA, you know, the forthcoming guidance on CBD and other cannabinoid products, they simply take a long time to understand what they're dealing with. And so is it any surprise that, you know, there is a distinction, a line that's very hard in the sand for them to draw? And as you said, there's not a lot of time. This has all been done in the course of maybe a month at most. So I don't know if I don't know what the question is, but it's certainly an observation.
No, but seriously, think about that for a second. The idea that there's this major decision that's made that is necessarily politicized, at least in part, at any level, and then it gets turned over for execution to a team of agencies, and agencies that don't ordinarily talk to one another, and people that have areas of expertise, and there's many, 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 many people involved at many levels. So you have to just think about that implementation. The fact that things have gone in that direction is pretty remarkable there. But, you know, Darren, we're kind of sitting in limbo waiting for the FDA to make some sort of announcement as it relates to cannabinoids as a result of the 2018 Farm Bill. I wouldn't say deferring, but sort of, you know, ratifying the fact that the FDA has authority over products intended for human consumption, particularly from hemp. And it does appear that there's a pathway towards that, as using the terminology from former interim commissioner of the FDA, Gottlieb, and then recently the new commissioner, who I just can't recall his name right now, apologize for that, but he said that it would be folly, basically, to try to undo the CBD industry specifically because of its success and because of how widespread it is. So it does show a signal. What do we think the FDA is going to do next? And does that get delayed? Because there was rumors about, you know, the fall of some sort of announcement, or even sooner. Or, you know, there's all these rumblings on digital media that say, this is going to happen tomorrow, for example. The FDA is going to come down. And, of course, it never happens. So, in any event, what do you see in terms of the impact of COVID on FDA and how these businesses operate in the meantime?
It's so interesting, Bob. I think you and I could, sit with a beer and talk about this for a lot longer. But it reminds me of when the 2018 Farm Bill was first passed. Immediately after that, virtually there was a government shutdown, which listeners will remember. And there was a similar question at that time. Of course, it wasn't as wide-reaching as the pandemic, and it was a lot more, I think, predictable and controllable, and a lot less scary. And so people didn't necessarily think that it was going to have the sort of impact on our day-to-day lives as this pandemic did, right? But there were still questions then as to what delay that would have for, at that time, USDA rulemaking. We've been waiting for a longer time than I think any of us would care to admit for FDA to come out with some kind of clarification. I think I think the clearest indications they've given were exactly that quote you're mentioning there from the previous commissioner Gottlieb in terms of pathways to affirmative regulation. We're still not seeing any sign that those are forthcoming in the immediate future. I don't know whether COVID is going to affect that, but I would presume as much. We've still seen some activity from the FDA recently. I know you guys touched on some of the warning letters with Ashley a few weeks ago that they've issued, especially in relation to those claims being made around COVID, which is, of course, a regrettable example. But we do take FDA, at its word that it's trying to get to the heart of this issue. We do think that it's important. I personally don't know that it's come up in the context of applications for relief. I'm not sure that that's where the distinction is being made between hemp and marijuana for those purposes, but it certainly underlies the point that there is a lot of confusion that is going on around the country, certainly with regulators and certainly with law enforcement that our hemp clients are already used to, where from state to state and from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and indeed from law enforcement officer to law enforcement officer, it is not yet easily discernible for, the average person to distinguish between marijuana and hemp, and that's going to continue to be an issue until there's, at one level, FDA clarity on that issue, and then, of course, at another level, more proactive federal leadership on marijuana policy.
Well, Darren, what is your message to any of our listeners out there, any of the business owners who are concerned with the implications of how this is going to impact their business, or maybe who are trying to apply for these loans, navigating the legal issues surrounding all of this? What's your message to them today?
I'd say, first of all, I feel for all cannabis businesses right now. I feel for all businesses right now, but I would flip that message into one of opportunity and say that now more than ever is the time to establish relationships. If that relationship includes with legal counsel, that would be an important one to start. I know it sounds very lawyerly as a disclaimer, but it really, depending on which questions you're facing, depending on which questions are important for your business to survive right now, and to thrive on the other end of this, I'd really recommend that you should not be navigating, especially legal questions or trying to work out whether you're being, honest enough or whatever it is on a certain application. Call a lawyer. Right now at the Hood and Law Group, we're waiving consultation fees, especially for this purpose. We understand that there's a lot of businesses out there with these sorts of questions. And we're here to help. It feels good to be a problem solver in this strange time. Of course, we're not out there in the hospitals donning protective gear and helping people, saving their lives. But certainly we feel inspired by the fact that we get to help you control some aspect of your life. And of course, for many, your business is one of the most important aspects. So we're here to help. We're inspired by that opportunity. So please pick up the phone.
Very well said. Very well said. And our hats are off to those hardworking folks that are out there keeping the trains running on time and taking care of people. Fascinating times, fascinating legal issues. You ever think that that something like this would impact what was otherwise an extraordinary, complex, illegal environment concerning the cannabis plant?
We are just in a microcosm of, as we've said here today, of what goes on in the cannabis world on a day-to-day basis. I think our clients know that they're dealing with novel issues all the time. We're dealing with novel issues all the time. None of us could have imagined that this was waiting around the corner for us in 2020, but here we are. And, on one hand, we have cities around the country celebrating this industry as essential, and we need to take that message. We need to be, strong protectors of this industry, and we need to be good to one another so that we're coming out of this stronger.
Well said, Darren. Thank you so much for being a guest here with us on the Hoban Minute. I'm hoping for your sake that soccer comes back sooner rather than later, and excellent to have you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Darren.
Thank you guys so much, and glory, glory, Man United.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minute special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.